The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's Thursday evening again. I'm David Zeidel and this is the AutJet Business Show. And tonight we've got Professor Nick Benedell, a strategy consultant, a keynote speaker, and we will get into the details of exactly what he's achieved and what he's done. But I must tell you that the AutJet Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of AvStage. Let them bring your corporate event to life and make it unforgettable.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
So welcome to the AutJet Business Show. Before I introduce Nick, as you know, every week before we get going, I give you a short little business story. And tonight's story is around a saying that goes, turnover is vanity, profit is sanity, but cash is reality. And when you're in business, you're always aiming to get that turnover, to make the sales, to get the revenue, to get the money flowing in. But it doesn't stop there. Because that's the top line. And if you're only thinking about the top line, then you're showing off. If somebody says, how's your business doing? And you give them the numbers of what the top line is, they say that's vanity. And profit is sanity. Because you got to pay for all your expenses and only then can you tell how much you're actually making. And that's your sanity. But the reality is that more companies go bankrupt from cash flow reasons than any other single reason. And that's your reality. So not only do you need to make a profit, but you need to have the cash flow to sustain the business in the meantime, because there's a delay between the profit and maybe the money coming in. So that was your business lesson from me tonight, but I think you're going to learn a lot more from Professor Nick Benedell. And he's a true pioneer in business education. Prof. Benedell was the founding director of the Gordon Institute of Business, what we know as GIBS. Nick has spent over three decades shaping the minds of South Africa's business leaders. He's got a PhD from Washington and an MBA from UCT. And he originally studied at Rhodes, I think it was. And before entering academia, Nick held leadership roles in the mining and manufacturing sectors, and then he later went on to lead the WITS Business School and then left WITS and started GIBS in 2000. And GIBS has become one of the leading business schools in South Africa. And in fact, not only South Africa, but top ranked in the whole of Africa. And it's known for its strategic leadership focus and global reach. Nick is not only a respected educator and speaker, but he's also a passionate advocate for leadership in complex environments. He's worked with companies like MTN and General Electric, and he continues to inspire executives across the continent and beyond. So Nick, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show with us tonight. And I know that you're going to talk around the entrepreneurial mind and how we know if it's good strategy, or in fact, what I want to get to at some stage is what do we need to learn if we want to run a business? But I want to start off with a quote that I saw that you gave. And that quote was, what can this business do that the world wants it to do and that its competitors can't do? And you said that's a good starting point for a business. Can you just go through that in a little bit more detail and explain to us what do you mean that your business needs to do something that others can't do?
Thanks so much, David. And great to be with you again, giving me the opportunity to share a few thoughts. Great to work with you. So I wrote that line down some years ago now, because in a competitive world, what you have to have built into your operation is a level of differentiation. You have to offer something different that creates value. So the statement I wrote is, as you said, what can this business do that the customers want, which is about insights into where value is being created now, or will want, which is about foresight, that your rival can't do. Now, that is not all you do, but you have to have a good eye on that. Just as you made a distinction between cash and profit, you must make a distinction between the stuff you have to do to be in business and the stuff that really is going to differentiate you.
And how do you know what's going to differentiate you when you're starting out your business and you're just hoping to make a profit in kind of originally? How do you know what, or how do you try and assess what's going to differentiate you?
Yeah, well, that's a very important question, because different businesses at different stages of their journey have to have different ways of looking at this. And at the beginning, I think you have to start with an idea that is insightful and different, and that normally comes from understanding something about the customers you're aiming at. And that comes from looking at your business from a customer's point of view. I could use many South African examples that I think have been so successful precisely because they started with that journey. I think of Discovery or Nando's. We could talk about either of them. And whether they're big conglomerates like AB InBev, the old SA Breweries, it doesn't really matter the scale. But when you're starting, it's a very vulnerable, it's tricky, and you've got to hope that you get the basic operations right. It's no good having a good idea that's different if you haven't got the basic operations right. So there may be 10 things you've got to do to open the door. You better do them all well, at least as well as your competitors. But there should be a few things you're doing differently. And those things in the long run is what sustains your performance.
So I want to get to the general understanding of how to run a business, but let's go to your specific case. You headed up the Wits Business School. You had a nice position there. And then you decided to start Gibbs. If you can just take us back, and I think you started it in the year 2000. If you can take us back 25 years, why did you think there was a need for another business school? And then how did you go about, what was the approach that now led to this amazing business school that's 25 years old?
Well, that's a good question, Dave. You know, if I think about the starting journey, it was in my own life I'd run a company, as you mentioned. And I always valued, over the years that I was an academic and a consultant and ran the Wits Business School, the very simple idea that a business school is there to do many things, including research, but it's really there to empower individuals and organizations to be successful. So my starting point is I had an affinity for the apex job, for the people at the top, doing the very difficult job of holding it all together and making it happen. And because I had that passion and affinity, I think people viewed what we had to say as being useful. And my goal always at Gibbs was to be close to business and to listen carefully to what is needed by mainly big companies, although we worked with smaller companies and NGOs and government, but mainly big companies. And I started the process by having cups of tea with CEOs. before I even opened the doors. I went and had cups of tea. I didn't tell them much about the school. I asked them, and I was in a fortunate position to have access to those kinds of people, to say, what's keeping you up at night as you look into the 21st century? Because this journey began in 1998. And I asked that simple question, and I went and reflected on it, and I made notes, and I thought about it. And I thought, what kind of programs should we design? And one of our big innovations in those early years was to customize programs for companies, mainly big corporates, of course, who could afford to bring, you know, had the scale to use our expertise and our knowledge. But that was the approach. Look, always look from the outside in and ask yourself, how can I add value to someone else? You know, I once read a brilliant quote from the chairman of Kellogg's. We all know Post-Toasties. He said, making money is not the purpose of business. What a demeaning and undignified description of our goal. Adding value to people is a great purpose, as a consequence of which you make a lot of money. And I've always thought you've got to get the horse before the cart. You know, we're a public institution. We were there to serve South African business. I thought we brought a different flavor, and we definitely worked very hard to build our relationships with South African corporates.
So I want to ask you next around, why did you decide to go and start another business school once you'd done this research, rather than, as you said, have cups of tea and then do it within the place that you were? But we need to go for an ad break. I almost said a tea break, and you can answer that when we get back.
The AltJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AltJet Business Show, and together we listening to Professor Nick Benedel giving initially his story, and then we're going to expand it a bit further into understanding how we can use his story to make our story. But what Professor Benedel said was, first of all, if you're looking to do something, you got to do your research. You got to know what your customer wants, and he used it as the saying, go and have lots of cups of tea with the right people. And then he said, it's around adding value. You will make the profit that you need, but will only make it if you're adding value. The purpose should be to add value, not just to make the money. And then, Nick, just before we went for the break, I said, you were the dean of the Wits Business School. You were in a position where you could have taken this. And was it, why start another business school? If you're trying to do something different, is it hard to change something that's already been around for a long time? Just unpack that for us, please, of why not change where you're at? Why start something new?
Well, David, it's a great question. I had 13 fantastic years at the Wits Business, all six ahead of it, and I loved every minute of it. I've been very fortunate to love 40 years of doing what I do. But the journey started with the challenge of, you've touched on it, the challenge of mature organizations is that their memory is stronger than their vision. And a business school is hosted in a big university. And it was, without being overcritical, it was very difficult to get innovative things done. But also personally, I'd spent 13 years there and I felt I wanted a new challenge. I'd also, which relates to the cups of tea, I'd traveled the world visiting great business schools. And I'd done my doctorate in the States, as you mentioned. So I had, and I'd run a company. So I had a mix of things working for me. I'd run a business school. I'd seen the best in the world. I'd had cups of tea with them. And I'd run an organization, including the business school, but I'd run a company, as you mentioned. So I felt reasonably confident. I was paranoid with fear because it was a huge investment we were making. And, you know, when you start things out, you never know where you're going to end up. So I was full of energy and determination and a sense of responsibility to the University of Pretoria, who got behind us, as did the Gordon family, very generously. It's why it's called the Gordon Institute of Business Science. And they took a chance with me. I made a commitment to get this right, and I stuck to it.
So if you can take us through the steps, you have this idea to start a university. Was step one to go get funding, or maybe let's go back? I think I understand. Step one was to have lots of tea, getting the ideas of what is needed out there, plus your experience, plus your knowledge. But then a lot of people have great ideas, and trying to get ideas into execution is very difficult. Can you take us through those steps?
I'll try. So step one is that you have to have the courage to begin the journey. And, you know, as I said, I love being at the Wits Business School, but I had to have the courage to step onto the freeway and leave my employer and take the risk of starting with a blank sheet of paper and pencil in four or five things that I thought were important. And with that, the university and I came to terms about what a new school might look like. They were very keen to establish a new school, especially when I said it should be in Sandton, where the business community is and was located. So the first thing is you've got to have a level of chutzpah. You've got to have a level of drive, and you've got to take a chance. You can't jump a chasm in two jumps, as someone American once said to me. I stepped out into the traffic and took my chances. And the university were very supportive. They got behind it and they drove a lot of it. And then it was, how do we resource this? And that's where I was very fortunate and privileged. We've known Donald Gordon from Wits, where we started a school of government, and we raised the money to do that from him. And I got to know him through that. I chaired the group that got that school going. And so I knew him, and we went to him, and he said, okay, let's have a look. And so with the university's money and his funding, we had the wherewithal, and I was extremely fortunate. Unlike most people who start with no resources, I had the resources to build a campus and to launch the school. And for 2 years, we made a deficit, but I had the funding to cover that deficit and then to get the school into a better situation. And, you know, we've had 25 years of driving down that road.
Was there ever a time where you kind of looked at what you'd done and thought back and said, what the heck have I done? Was there ever a time where you thought, I'm going to pull out of this?
No, I never. I was determined to succeed. But the chairman of a very large merchant bank who was on the council came while the building was under construction. Larry Dipinar, very well-known guy. And he toured the campus with me. It looked a bit like Kosovo. And he said, Nick, big capital, fixed costs, and no income. So I didn't sleep for 3 nights thinking about what he said, which I knew. But he made it pretty clear. And I knew I had to make it work financially. I had to position it well. I had, most important in any business, attracting the right few people at the beginning. And looking back, I realized I had a wonderful team for so many years. Is firstly, that I understood them and they could understand me. Secondly, that they knew more about what they had to do than I did in their portfolios. And thirdly, that I trusted them implicitly. To put it crudely, I trust them to do what they said they would do when I wasn't there, as it were. They were an incredible team, and we worked. David, if I think back of the hours we worked for so many years, I worked a 14-hour, 6-day a week. I started at 6, I ended at 9. I worked over the weekends. I mean, it took an enormous effort because, as you hinted at, we were up against very well-established business schools. Not many people know that South Africa offered the first MBA out of North America, that South Africa had very good schools at UCT, at Stellenbosch and Wits, and I had to compete with them. So, you know, it took, I had to nail my colors to the mast to say, as so many of South Africa's great businesses have done. You know, I think of Capitec, now I think of Time Bank, one of our alumni has built Time Bank. I think of Nando's. I have so much respect for that early part, not of the scale I did, it was small scale, but what became these huge businesses led by incredible people like Adrian Gore. I mean, we know all these characters. South Africa has been blessed to have produced and to have made the room for extraordinary people. We're a world-class business embryonic economy. We produce champions, and many now may be in Australia and Canada and the USA and Britain, but they have their origins in the DNA of great businesses in South Africa.
So what do you think creates that, that we have that? Is it something in the water?
Well, not quite as simple as that, but it is something that I would say, not all of this very attractive, about coming from what I would call a frontier society. You know, it's not politically correct to talk about settlers in the way South Africans colonized South Africa. But nevertheless, in the energy and effort of that, was born a pretty hardy kind of individual, much like the USA. And I would say, much like China has in the last 30 years, if you look at the great Chinese companies, Indian companies, these were remarkable individuals who were in a tough environment. In China, the Communist Party was anti-capital, and then Deng Xiaoping changed all of that. And suddenly this breed of great entrepreneurs took to China and the world. And I was just driving on the freeway just now, looking at all the Chinese cars here. Whether we like it or not, they're here. These are remarkable companies.
And so you've mentioned the term entrepreneurial quite a bit. And I know you talk quite a lot, and you even lecture on the entrepreneurial mind or the mindset. What exactly do you mean by the entrepreneurial mindset? And has everyone got that, or is it only specific individuals?
That's also a very good question. I mean, I think there's an element of creativity. It has to start with Edward de Bono, you know, just being creative, looking at something differently. As I had to do at Gibbs, I knew what we'd done at Wits. I had to offer something different, not completely different, but different in some attractive way. The second is, I think you do have to have, you know, these people I've admired all over the world have to have courage and character. You know, it doesn't happen naturally. It happens because you have the drive and the courage to keep at it, even when the wind's blowing against you. I've mentioned the insights. And then I would say, you know, as ordinary as this sounds, it's just hard work. It's slogging away at operations. It's keeping your eye on everything. You know, the Gibbs campus is a big campus. I would go to the toilets. I would go into the kitchens. I would check that the lights were working in every classroom. I was obsessive about the campus being clean. And so there was a tremendous effort to make sure that operationally we could get it right. And in those early days, it was frantic in the frontier of starting something new. It was a bit chaotic at times, but I think we did get those operational elements right.
And now you've got others that are busy running the business, and you less spending less time there. Have they taken over and learned from what you've done, or are they doing it differently?
Well, every leader brings their own framework. And when you're a founder, one of the great traps of a founder is to hang around too much and be a backseat driver. So I left, as amazing as it sounds even to me, is 10 years ago I stepped down. And I was followed by a very capable successor, and now her successor has followed. And I think, I hope, from what I can see, the core values are still there. But I still teach at the school. I teach a full load, and I'm there a lot, but I'm not involved in any way in the day-to-day management, because my nature is such that I would backseat drive. So I've had to be very, very strict. Paul Harris taught me this. When you leave, you leave. But I did allow a little escape clause to keep teaching. So I come and go quietly and still make the contribution. Because the reason that I started Gibbs and the reason that I joined WITS in those old days is because I've loved the environment of trying to work with executives and trying to help them think through the issues they face. So I've been a teacher for 40 years, and I want to keep doing that and make a small contribution in that way.
And when you step back onto the campus, are you filled with this sense of pride where you look at this and you say, wow, I built this, or does it just wash over you?
No, I was so privileged. You know, this is the thing, the great blessing of South Africa. If you take a bit of risk and you've got the right values, all those things I was talking about, this country creates opportunities. And no, I don't have that kind of ego. I served, and I was privileged to be given the chance to do that and privileged to create an environment where others could do the same thing. It was simply a great, great privilege.
And the topic that you lecture when you go there, is it strategy or strategy aligned?
I teach three things, really. Strategy, how to compete and what to do next. I teach strategic leadership, how to make things happen. And then I've started teaching the last 5 years ago something that's always interested me. You know, I lived in five countries by the time I was 10. So I spoke Arabic, I spoke German, I spoke Swahili, and obviously English. I learned Afrikaans quite quickly. And so I've been a global person all my life. And I've traveled a huge amount all my life. So I teach geopolitics. You know, what's going on in the world and why does it matter? So those are my three subjects: geopolitics, strategic leadership, and strategy.
Okay, I want to ask you the difference between strategy and strategic leadership, but again, we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're in conversation with Professor Nick Benedell. And just before the break, Nick was telling us that he goes back to Gibbs to do some lecturing, and he mentioned that he lectures on strategy and strategic leadership, and he made a distinction between those two things. So, Nick, if you wouldn't mind telling us, what is the difference between strategy and strategic leadership?
I'll try and put it simply, David. So strategy is how do we compete and what will we do next? Very simple. Strategic leadership is how are we going to make this happen? And that's really the simple difference. In strategic leadership, what you're looking at is the systems, the operations, the measurement, the motivation of people, all of those implementation, the culture of the organization. And you asked me about whether Gibbs has changed. You know, one thing that just happened quite naturally in the organization was the culture. We had a culture of making it work, of serving the people who came to us as individuals or companies, and of working as a team. We never had any sort of fights between us or disagreements. A big part of leadership is being able to represent through your decisions and behavior, a cause, a purpose. Not write mission statements. I've never been much of a fan of that, although we obviously had to. But rather that in your behavior, you try and share the purpose of what you're doing. It goes beyond where you started, turnover and profits. And no business Now, profits are just a way of measuring. And I was thinking of your introduction. You've got accounting and counting. You've got accounting, which is a work of art, and then counting is the cash, which is absolutely right. But those are the outcomes. What good leaders do is cause the outcomes in the behavior of their people and the systems. That's what you're after. How can you cause a result? Very often in the beginning of businesses, the founder, the entrepreneur, becomes too dominant and often fails because they remain too dominant. And what you've got to do is build a capable team. And I suppose, you know, there was just too much to do. I delegated a lot. And if I think as a manager, not a leader or an entrepreneur, I was a moderately good manager because I let people get on with their jobs. I didn't micromanage, which is a common tendency, is to overmanage and underlead.
So if somebody's listening to this and they're starting their own business, how can they learn to run their business better? Other than going to Gibbs to do that.
That's such a broad question. I'm not sure how to answer that. I mean, you know, let's say you're a couple of years in and you've got a small business and it's doing okay. You've got to pay tremendous attention to detail. I've never met a successful entrepreneur who wasn't obsessed with detail. All of them, absolutely obsessed. One of my big heroes, Robbie Brosen, who built Nando's, was completely obsessed with the quality of the product for decades. I think that's a big, big thing to remember as you grow the business. And my advice is always make sure you're doing some of the frontline work, because that keeps you in touch with the business. Don't get too remote from the day-to-day of the business. Keep an eagle eye and ear open for disappointed customers. They are your best source of feedback. And talk to one way or the other your target market and ask, where do you currently do this business? And why would you not come to us? And what can we do that would be different? Simple questions. But I think those are an attitude of habit, that anyone who buys product from you, like people listening to your show, are offering you their time. And it's a privilege for you to have their time. And I can hear in the way you do this that you respect that privilege. So respect for customers is so, so important.
And if we reverse the question, and you might give me the same answer, but it might be different. What do people do that will almost guarantee failure in a business?
Well, I think let me come at it first to say take customers for granted. Mm. Stop thinking hard enough about what I can do differently. Stop thinking about how can I innovate? I mean, innovate the product or the service. And study. And I don't mean go to business schools. I mean these days, you know, David, we live in a world where all the information in the world is accessible to anybody. So you could be in Indonesia and have 5G. You've got the same information as anyone in Silicon Valley. So you've got all the information, and keep searching and keep looking. And I use ChatGPT and AI because it is so much more efficient and I achieve much faster results. And I ask questions and I refine them. And it's a mine of information. You've got to be very sensitive about using it. But we never had these tools. I never had these kind of tools. So you've got to keep curiosity about what makes your business tick. If you as the owner and the entrepreneur are not deeply curious about how this thing works and why it works and see the glint in customers' eyes when you meet their deeper needs, you won't last long.
And as we go into the world of greater AI, there's some people who, like yourself, say you must embrace it and it's giving you access to unbelievable information. And there are other people who are hugely fearful and saying, this is the end of the business world as we know it. Some are even saying this is the end of humanity. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, you know, if you think of the nuclear bomb, And you think about Oppenheimer, I've become whatever it is, the destroyer of worlds. Everyone thought the nuclear age would be the end of humanity, but we behaved ourselves for 80 years and never used them again. If you think of the printing press, which displaced all the monks who wrote all the Bibles by hand in the monasteries, I'm sure they thought it was the end of the world. I don't know. We never know. That's part of what keeps us alive, is we don't know about these things. I think of biochemistry, I think of AI, I think of climate change. We don't know. But if you keep being curious and following the trends and exploring it and making sure you're not being stupid, these are devices for the human spirit. They're devices for the human mind. They are devices for the human fingers. And if I think of, manufacturing mills in England in 1800 compared to manufacturing today, thank goodness for the technology. We've lived 80 years of extraordinary progress, and we've messed up a lot of things, and there are lots of problems, but we've never lived this long. We've never lived this materially well off, and we've had 80 years of relative peace. I know there are many problems in the world, but my father went through the Second World War and the Depression in the sequence of 15 years. We're blessed to be where we are. And my advice is be smart. Be smart about it. Don't be stupid. Be smart. So when I started with ChatGPT, I was very careful. And as I've got more and more confidence in it, I've used it as a tool. It doesn't replace my business sense. It doesn't replace my insights and my knowledge and memory. You don't let go of those things. You don't let it rule you. It's a tool, and it's a very powerful tool. And I can see it in social life. I see it in business life and organizational life. These tools are absolutely everywhere, and you can shout at the cell phone, but it isn't going away. We can complain about social media, but it's become part of the fabric, and we should probably regulate it in some ways, but nevertheless, it's an empowering phenomenon, a tool that has come to our use.
Great. So I'm going to ask you again. We're about to go for another ad break, but when we come back, if you had to give five lessons that you wish the young Nick had known, that you now have that information, what would those be? But we'll do that after the break.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life. We've come a long way together. Hundreds of thousands listening in over 80 countries, sharing the same goals as you, the same vision, the same values. Thank you for staying with us. Here's to you. Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're in a fascinating conversation with Professor Nick Benadel. And I'm always amazed on these shows how quickly time goes. And we've got the last 5 minutes. And in those 5 minutes, I want to see if we can touch on some of the things that it's a way of just thinking what you could do different or what you wish you had known when you were younger that would have maybe got you to move even more, or maybe that you did know, but that helped you become successful. Nick, have you thought of what some of those things might be?
I have, Dave, and it's David, it's a fantastic question, actually. I had to really think a bit about that. Now, I barely passed high school, so not much was expected of me. I was a somewhat sickly also as a young kid. And so I don't think much was expected of me. And I think I was just very lucky to find my passion, my ikigai, my mission. I've written down four things. Firstly, I love operations. Anybody who invites me to a factory, I'm going to be there. I wish I'd understood engineering. I'm not an engineering person, but I'm fascinated always, whatever business it is how does the operations work? That for me is, I wish I'd understood that better earlier. Secondly, I wish I'd understood finance earlier better. I'm not a finance guy. I've always said the money will follow the energy, but I wish I'd been a little more acute at that. I won't tell you what I got for accounts too. I wish I'd been a little faster a little earlier. I'm a pretty fast guy, but I wish I'd been a little faster a little earlier. And finally, I wish I was a little more organized. Throughout my life, I've been relatively disorganized, and out of some of the chaos and disorder have come my best ideas. But having said that, I can be inefficient. And, you know, a lot of my friends are accountants or engineers that organize their work in a very particular way. I keep a very structured to-do list. I'm pretty good at my diary. I probably could have done a little more, given a little more if I'd been a little more organized. But actually, I'm happy I wasn't, because I want to end by just saying something that really matters in all of this. It's to have fun. This is a one-shot deal. This is your life. You spend more time working than any other thing. Take it seriously, but don't take it too seriously, and never take yourself too seriously. This is just life. We will pass on. Others will follow us. The human story will continue. As Shakespeare said, every actor has its moment on the stage. And I've had such a lucky, privileged career. So thanks so much for inviting me, David.
Wow, that's an amazing way to end what you're saying. But I want to just mention again some of the amazing stuff that you've said. So you said it's very important to have courage and drive, and then to attract the right people, to be creative and to be different, and you create that from being curious. And then be in touch with your business. Understand kind of what your customers really want, and then know your purpose, understand what your purpose is. And then in terms of leadership, it's know what you need to do, but then you have to make it happen. And then you finally ended off with a great message of saying, while you're doing all of that, don't forget to have fun. So Nick, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the show. I'm David Zeidel. This has been the Orchard Business Show, and this has been Professor Nick Benedell.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
The Orchard Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of AvStage. Let them bring your corporate event to life and make it unforgettable.